Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium & Gale Network, and presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida. They are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. You can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance or business law matters, real estate wills, or trust and estate planning. Well, we finally come to you guys. Tuesday night, big win for Gator baseball. We'll get to that later in the show with Dez Baseball Minute. 5-0 over the Seminoles. Certainly that was the nice little highlight after Sunday night's 73-72 loss to Iowa. The boys had a hell of a weekend in Tampa for about 48 hours up until 10 o'clock p.m. on Sunday night. So, Will, how are we feeling right now?
We're at stage three. We're at depression. It's been a couple days. I think I go through the workday and it'll just be like 2 p.m. and I'll just think, like, how the hell did we lose to Iowa? How did that shot go in? How did that guy hit that shot over Urban? How did we miss so many layups in the first half? Just depression, denial, back to denial. I kind of keep thinking that I'm just going to like wake up and it was all a dream. But that's why I've got my Black Flag Mentality funeral hoodie back on, because RIP to the Florida Gator basketball season 2025 to 2026. Sad ending.
Dev?
Yeah, not much more to add to that. I didn't expect this to be the way they go out, especially not in the first round. Super disappointing to have Ruben no show, to have, you know, to not get the shot off at the end. There's so much stuff throughout the course of the game, so much stuff that surprised me. But I think that the way that Ruben played, not to single him out, because it was, you know, a whole bunch of guys that contributed and a whole bunch of different plays that contributed. But that's the one thing that was the most surprising. I think we had I went back through some transcripts looking for commentary that we had throughout the season that might have been predictive of how the season would ultimately end. And one of the things that I found was us repeating that Ruben had become one of our most consistent contributors. And so for that to happen in the round of 32, it's just really shocking. I mean, a shocking end to the season. Ultimately, I think the further away we get from the season, you look back and it's, you know, you were 16-2 in the SEC and, you know, you win an SEC championship. But yeah, for right now, man, it's just a really, really bitter ending to what was a realistic shot at going back to back. So frustrating, sad, disappointed, all the above.
It was as much of a crash of emotions as you can have for those that were in Tampa. You had a day, really a weekend, with not a cloud in the sky. Vibes were immaculate. We had many of the Breakfast Boys together, drinks on the water in a marina, just truly, I mean, immaculate vibes. And then to walk in there and just get hit with that. I don't know about you guys, but it felt uncomfortable the entire game. I don't know that there was really a period. I know we talked about it a little before we started recording when we went up 4 with 5 minutes left. There was maybe that thought of, oh, maybe we just pull away here and we're not going to have a nail biter. But besides that like brief moment, pretty much the entire game was uncomfortable. And like Will pointed out, I mean, the first half, it felt like there were 4 or 5, maybe more, like layups or short little bunnies where you're used to seeing them go down all year and they just weren't going down. It was frustrating to watch, because for us who've watched every game this year, I mean, it was like a lot of what you were seeing throughout the year without the result. It was over and over seeing Condon right at the rim or Lee trying to finish, and it wasn't going our way. And so it was frustrating, really frustrating. And obviously with how it ended, I'm sure we'll get into that, but just a heartbreaker, a heartbreaking end to an awesome season overall.
Yeah, you guys were, you know, in the building, so you would know, and I hate that put a damper on a great weekend for you boys. Wish I could have been there, but yeah, watching on TV, I kind of feel the same sentiment, Hunter. Like, I didn't really feel super comfortable I did like the start of the game. We started like on a 4-0 run. They like tried to lob something in. Rube slapped it away, and we had a quick fast break. And I was like, yeah, they simply cannot hang with the Florida Gators basketball team. But as time went on, they started hitting some shots. Their main guard was off, but he was still distributing. And yeah, just never felt comfortable until we flipped a switch when we were down 12. And then the ending is just, you still can't quite, you know, put your thumb on it. It's such a head scratcher. For this team to go out like that, it sucks. It's a terrible way to end this season. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those losses that, you know, makes you question, like, why do I do sports? You know, like, when I was 10 or 11, why didn't I like pick up movies a little bit more or something? Like, but goes to show though that that is also part and due because there is expectation, because this team has created expectation. So that's a good thing in itself. We've been dying for that, for this program to be restored, and we know it has under Todd, even though maybe some people on Gator Twitter might be saying differently, because that was the first game they watched this season. But yeah, it's tough. I hate that you guys had to be there in person. It was terrible for me at my local pub.
Yeah, I think the most heartbreaking thing is that we just got beat in the areas of the game that we are so dominant in all year. Rebounding, I think we eventually tied that rebounding margin with Iowa, but they dominated the glass in the first half. We really couldn't contribute to offensive rebounds and second chance opportunities. The rim protection was non-existent. Will, I think you said Iowa shot over 70% from inside the arc, which is the highest we've allowed in 144 games under Todd Golden. And Chinning Lou picking up his third foul in the first 15 seconds of the second half, picking up his fourth before even the under 12 timeout. Kondo had three fouls before the second, before the under 12 timeout as well. So just an overall weird game. We've kind of gotten those vibes in the last month. Thought Kentucky in the second half was a weird game in Rupp. Again, the rematch for the third game against Kentucky was a weird game. Then we got Vanderbilt, obviously got blown out. So just a weird way to end this season, despite going 16-2 in the regular season, dropping out of the AP top 25 in December, and then surging to somehow clinching a one seed, and to lose in that fashion is heartbreaking. The guy making the three, just some letdowns defensively. Iowa made some tough shots. I thought their smaller lineups gave us a lot of trouble. That number six guy, I don't know how many points he ended up with. I think like 18 or 20. Finished with 20 on 7-10 shooting. So he was fantastic. And I don't think we really made adjustments until the under 12 timeout, when we went Boogie, Lee, and then the combo of Herb or Zay Brown, and then Tommy and Kondo. And that's when we kind of got out and transitioned, started getting some baskets, cutting that deficit, started pressing a little bit. But everything that we usually dominate in, we were severely limited, which is unusual for how the Gators have been playing basketball for the last 3 months.
Yeah, we went up 65-61 with 5.5 left. There was a graphic that the broadcast showed that Tommy had 13 points in the second half at that point. Kondo had 12. I think when we went down 51-39, you could see those guys, those champions, that grit and that we're going to will us to a victory kind of shown through. You could feel the shift after, I think, Golden called a timeout. We kind of, it was a TV timeout. They reset, came out, Houck hits a three. We go on the run. We go up, we ultimately go up five, and then, or excuse me, up four with 5.5 left. But then those subsequent possessions after that, you had Lee over dribbling, and then we had to end up heaving a three at the end of the shot clock. That's an air ball. That turns into an Iowa three on the other end. And then you're down one, and then you have the weird play going into the sideline. And I guess this is kind of the denial stage where we're just like, you know, contemplating every single play in those last 5 minutes. But then you have the Hout getting shoved, going after the ball, but the ball's hitting the referee at the same time, so he doesn't see Hout get shoved, and another weird play. There was just so much down the stretch that went wrong all at once, and it was like every single one of these things had to go wrong in order for Florida to the sequence of events to lead to Florida losing the game. So that stood out going down the stretch. I mean, even with 1.5 minutes left, we're up three. Condon dives on a loose ball after Hout pokes it away. We get the ball back. up 3, 1.5 minutes left, and it's the offensive possession is Boogie dribbling around for 28 seconds and then the ball getting slapped away, and it just so happens to touch his hand after the Iowa player slaps the ball away. So another one of those 50-50 bad luck bounces. It's just brutal, man. There were so many plays in the first half, too, that Iowa finished through Chinyelu, finished through Condon. A lot of tough layups that, I mean, a lot of this season guys weren't making shots at the rim over, you know, a perfectly vertical Chinyelu or a perfectly vertical Condon. It's just they hit their shots, they made their plays, and, I mean, it's just one of those games. It's how March goes. We got marched. And I think that the line in between what happened on Sunday night and what happened last season is so thin. And when you're on the wrong side of that, it just illustrates how fleeting and how quickly and suddenly and abruptly things can end in the NCAA tournament. So that's why you appreciate it when you do win them.
It's the hardest postseason tournament in sports to win. It is. You hear many people say it, and what Devin just said is exactly why. Last year, part of the reason the run was so much fun was because of some of how some of those games ended, right? I mean, you look back at UConn, at Tech, you know, at Auburn, Houston, all of them. I mean, the last, you know, four of the last five games we played, every single one nail biters, and you're on the right end of it. And then when you're on the wrong end of one, especially when it's in the round of 32, it's the sky's falling, and that's when the overreactions come, and people, you know, looking too far into it when it comes to the coach or how he constructs a roster or who he retained and who he didn't, and you see people doing that, and I'm sure we'll get into that too. But ultimately, it's the hardest tournament to win in sports, and we saw that. And like Devin said, we got marched. We're on the wrong side of it. I mean, he mentioned all those crazy things that happened. He didn't even mention the fact that the player who hit the three should have been in jail the whole half. So, we're on the wrong side of it. It happens. Gut-wrenching.
He's the first player in NCAA tournament history to throw a punch and hit the game-winning shot in the same game.
Yeah. And it's crazy, like, all those things went wrong and went poorly, and we still should have won the game. Like, we did not play well in the first half. We played much better the last, like, 15 minutes. Todd, with a brilliant decision to start pressing and to speed them up and kind of at least throw them off their rhythm. I think they had, like, 6 points the last, first stretch of, like, 10 minutes of game time there for us to really get back into the game. I hated the decision to press. I love the decision to foul. I think that he's a genius with that sort of stuff. And I totally agree. They were missing front ends of one and ones a couple times by happenstance for us to go on that big run. And so if you can get the ball out of Sturtz's hands and foul one of their bigs, and the chances they go one for two, and then, you know, I want Tommy Houck at the line shooting the free throws, because I trust him probably more than I trust even, you know, Boogie or Xavier. So if you're able to get that foul, or if, Xavier cuts right at the top of the three-point line and sort of takes it inside instead of letting his angle get cut off, or even if he just, like, jumps into the guy and maybe picks up a foul and just has to hit one free throw, you know, it could have been different. And so it's just like I disagree so vehemently with all of these people who are talking about, you know, oh, we need these, like, we need to recruit high school better, or we need to do this, or the roster was, you know, it was not constructed right. Like, we got another one seed. We're still top five in KenPom. I'm a sicko and still injected this afternoon. Just to try to see if it would help with the grieving process. We were number one in Bart Torovic for a month when, like, Michigan and Arizona and Duke were all playing their best two. We lost to Duke and Arizona by a combined, what, like, 3 points? UConn, too, like, 5 points or whatever it was total. Like, the roster, you know, we can nitpick here and there, but, like, went 16-2 for a stretch of February. It was playing the best ball of anybody in the country. It won the SEC championship. And, they just Iowa made more plays than we did down the stretch, and it's sad because I really hate it for, you know, you don't know if Tommy and Condon and Chinyelu and those guys are going to come back, but they were all just such great Gators. They always played so hard. They won so many games, and they won a national championship, and it sucks for them to go out that way, but it's like a testament to how good Todd is that, like, we were so poor and still had a chance to win, and, like, if we had escaped that game, like, not a doubt in my mind we were going to the Final Four. Because I think we matched up much better with Nebraska or Houston or Illinois. So it's tough, but, you know, Iowa's well coached. Maybe North Carolina will break their hearts, kind of like I was heartbroken on Sunday. That would be very nice. But it just stinks. I'm not sure what stage of the grieving process this is, but maybe it's acceptance.
Yeah, well said on the overreaction. I don't know what stage of the grieving that is, but it's just absurd. Like, to your point, there were people are saying, "Oh yeah, we need these like 5-star like lottery picks." Like, that's not who we are. We don't need to be. We've won without having to be that. And
nobody has won with that.
Exactly, and it's what we've been able to do as a program. You stick to that system, and just because it failed this one time, and everyone's coming for Boogie and Xavier, like, I understand that. And, you know, this whole, oh yeah, if we had better guards, this, that, of course, revisionist history. But like you said, we won the SEC with them, and we've known that we need the bigs. This team runs through the bigs, and then we just need those two guys to play complementary. And at certain points of the game, we relied on them too heavily, or whether the plays that were called up, you know, like Devin mentioned, the play where, you know, it's not even a play, where Boogie just dribbled for 20 seconds and tried to get to the rack, and, you know, Xavier dribbling and then not having a passing lane toward the end. But to me, Chinyelu, that was just unbelievable. And he was playing very out of character too. I'm sure you guys have seen the clips afterwards of him just running dudes over. Like, just was not Ruben Chinyelu at all. I don't know what happened there. And Condon and Tommy, they flipped a switch, but in the first half, you know, they weren't playing good enough, and we put ourselves in that position, similar to like one of those early non-conference games that we had. And then we just don't have the shooting and the guard play to get out of that hole, and we knew that. But yeah, like you said, hated the decision to press. If you are going to foul, I don't know, you don't need to press. So to me, I know Todd said earlier that if he was ever in that situation, he would do it. But hearing him say it after the fact, like, it still just, like, stings even more a little bit, because, like, you didn't have to really do either of those, in my opinion.
I just don't know why, if you were going to foul and you know you're going to foul, why don't you just put someone – like, why isn't Zay Brown playing free safety so that he can be there just to make sure you don't get beat? Because, like, there's only one play that can beat you, and it's the corner three to the guy who's shooting 50% from three on corner threes. And
who should have been in prison.
Yeah, and speaking of Zay Brown, you know, I mean, we win the game if he makes both free throws. And that's heartbreaking to see in itself, because he was playing so well until, like, I don't know what happened in that I guess it was like kind of the first half of the Kentucky game in Nashville, that he just like, I mean, he had the play against Kentucky in Rupp where he got the ball, let it in transition, and he got like intentionally fouled. And after that, he just like fell off a cliff. I don't know what happened. Like, he was playing hard. He did a great job like grabbing the rebound. But then, I mean, I don't know. What stage am I at? Let me know.
That was the point I was going to make, Will, was that he was playing hard. And you look back at that play on that rebound he got after we got the initial stop with 9 seconds left or whatever it was. And you had Lee, probably the guy you want, the guard you want, shooting the free throws, standing right beside him that he's fighting with for the rebound. And Boogie, your point guard, a veteran, guy that's been in the NCAA tournament before, probably another guy you would rather be taking those free throws, but it's heat of the moment. You're trying to secure the biggest rebound of the season, and he's fighting, he's playing hard, and you just wish that he could execute. And then I thought, Sam, you made a really good point about Houck and Condon both not playing all that well in the first half, and that kind of being overlooked because they turned it on once we went down by 12. And it seemed like that was a little bit of a problem that we had early on in the season, but where we just kind of took our foot off the gas at times and kind of took things for granted and didn't have those guards to really take games over like we did last year. Like if Condon or Houck took a night off early in the season or weren't playing well, it really showed up and we became a team that was beatable. And you saw that kind of happen in this game until it got to the point where it was like, oh crap, we're down by 12 points in the second half of the NCAA tournament. We got to turn it on now. One of the last point to make on this is there's always games like that in the tournament, and Florida fans that are complaining about roster construction should know that better than just about anybody else. And you don't have to go back very far to last year to say or to be able to use an example of games that don't go your way versus games that do go your way in the NCAA tournament. So trying to blame big systemic issues with the roster on a team that went 16-2 in conference play and became a one seed, it just seems silly. It seems very heat of the moment, drastic to say that they need to change their fundamental, you know, roster building process. It's just silly. It's silly. There's nothing about the program that I don't trust Todd Golden on at all. It was the way it shook out in the tournament this year. I have no doubts that he's going to have us at having a incredible roster next year that fits together perfectly, that has warts like every team in the country does, but that's going to be competitive again. So that's one of those things that's frustrating to see the day after people that are, you know, complaining about roster construction when you're a one seed that gets upset in the second round of the tournament.
Yeah, and 16-2 in a league that saw themselves get 10 bids. They make up four of the 16 teams in the Sweet 16. So despite the SEC having a quote-unquote down year, still one of the most impressive conferences so far throughout March. And the roster construction crap online is – I mean, we got Xavier Lee pretty close out of the portal after the national championship game, and he was supposed to be kind of that two-guard with Denzel Aberdeen until he kind of handcuffed us and made a late push for Boogie Flan that we were fortunate to get, because God knows what this roster would have looked like if Boogie did not withdraw from the NBA draft and came to Florida. So we should be fortunate that we were able to even attain a guard at his caliber defensively. You know, he improved so much throughout the season. But I just thought the biggest thing Sunday was just, I mean, credit to Iowa. I thought they did real well of taking Alex Condon out of the offensive flow in the first half. They weren't letting any penetration inside the paint. We didn't have a whole lot of points inside the paint in the first 20 minutes. The ball screen action defensively, I thought they played real well, pushing our guards 35 feet from the basket, not allowing any real cuts or open shooters. So it's just one of those games. It was a weird matchup. You don't have a whole lot of time to scout them. I know some of our assistant coaches were there Friday night watching Clemson, Iowa, but still, once you get punched in the mouth, you got to make some adjustments. And I thought we did a real good job late in the second half, but you just can't dig yourself into 12-point deficits. And he's now played he's coached 9 games in the NCAA tournament. I think we've trailed by double digits in 8 of those. 7 of those? Did anybody see that tweet?
Yeah, it was 6 of the 9 games that we trailed by double digits.
So, I mean, just from the rip, we got to come out playing better. And, Todd's still a young coach. He's 40 years old. I know he's got a national championship name in his profile now. But he's still young. He's still learning. We had a great front court and back court last year. Really a strong, one of the greatest back court in Florida Gators history that helped us manage some of these March comebacks that we witnessed on Sunday in Tampa. So I'm not concerned. I think the staff probably has a much better approach towards the portal this year. Helps that we're not making a deep March run, so maybe we can get these guys on campus a little bit sooner, get some of these talks going. But plenty of confidence in Todd Golden. There's a reason why every school in the country that's going to have an opening, UNC with Hubert Davis gone now. Mark Pope would see if he survives another year in Lexington. I mean, all the blue bloods are going to want him. Kansas with Bill Self potentially retiring. Hunter, what are your thoughts?
Not to mention the NBA.
The NBA, yeah. Do you think he fits the role of the NBA? I mean,
I don't think so.
I think he cares too much.
Yeah, you see the Hurley comparisons, and I'm not sure if I'm totally on board with that. I think people make that comparison because of the emotion in which Todd shows on the sidelines and the passion he has for each and every game. And the NBA in today's day and age, it's from a coaching perspective, it's a lot different. The influence you have on a team, you're at your player's disposal a lot more. I know the college game's changed a lot, and they have a little bit more of a, it's a player's game, and they're getting paid now, but it's a different beast than the NBA. And you put the wrong lineup out there or say the wrong thing, and star player's going to get you out of there. So I don't see it as a fit. But who knows? I mean, a lot of these coaches, a lot of these younger guys, they may have grown up idolizing certain NBA teams. Maybe they want to crack at it. So you don't know where his head's at there. But I'm pretty confident that if it's not the NBA, the University of Florida is going to be the only school he's coaching at.
To your point, Jackson, Todd's picked up quite a reputation, and everybody hates Todd Golden until your school needs a coach. So we got our guy. I'm not worried at all. Like, we've already nailed it on the head, just the fan base. I mean, we should expect it with Gator Nation. It comes with it. But, yeah, the overreaction to what he's already done to get us back to this point, it's just silly. It's the kind of just the modern sports culture we live in, where you just kind of got to get a takeoff to get a takeoff.
Sam, in the modern NIL era, we'll use UNC as the reference now since it's the only job open, but Kansas will come open in the future. Like I said, the Kentucky job is probably going to come open in the near future if Mark Pope continues to go in the seventh or eighth spot in the league play and the standings. What can they offer more than Florida can, if anything?
Nothing. I mean, it's just nostalgia, and I don't really think Todd cares about that. And there's only UNC opening, but like, I just on a short list, I can only think of maybe five schools that wouldn't take Todd over their current coach, and they're all one seeds with pretty young coaches, but they don't have national championships, on their resume. So he's going to be coveted. He's arguably one of the best coaches already. Doesn't have like quite the respect. It's crazy when you see some of these graphics of, before the tournament, top coaches in the tournament, all this nonsense. But yeah, and there's, of course, UNC is going to want Todd Golden. Coaching aside, I mean, look what that guy's done just to restore the passion in the program. I had some buddies, they sent me a clip. They were like, "Did you see him, John, with the Iowa coach?" Like, I was like, "Yeah, brother, it's pretty much every other game occurrence with our guy, and we'll go to war for him." So, you that's the guy you want leading a college program to your point, Jackson, to try to kind of rebuff the modern day NIL transfer portal era. You need a guy who's all in, and there's no doubt that he is, and we trust him.
To that point, Sam, I think that we saw the fieriness from Todd Golden starting like in year two. I remember going to the Florida-Alabama game in Gainesville, and that he was looking over at Nate Oates, staring him down when we blew out that Final Four Alabama team. He's clapping and gator chomping towards him and thinking, "Oh, we got a coach that's not backing down from the guy in the conference at the time." That was kind of as Calipari was on his way out at Kentucky. And I think the more success as a program we've had, the more the rest of the country has realized what kind of fiery competitor, asshole at times, depending on your perspective, Todd Golden is. And I say that as a Florida fan in the most complimentary way.
You can call him a maniac, like Summerall did.
Yeah. Well, he's a maniac, but he's a competitor. And I think the more it speaks to the success of the program that the rest of the country is starting to pick up on that. Just looking at this year, he had public run-ins with Nate Oates, yelling contest with John Calipari, and almost got involved in a he almost threw the second punch in a fight in an NCAA tournament game. Like, it's it's something that it's a reputation he's going to carry as a young guy that's successful, that's going to be in the public spotlight as a former national champion or as a national champion for the rest of his career. That's going to be his reputation going forward. And he's got to realize that. And as he grows and matures and everything else, that's going to be something that, you know, he changes, whether it's mellows out or whatever. But I think that that's something that the program is bearing, and that other programs are going to start to notice the more successful we are, is that Todd Golden is not going to back down from anybody. He's going to be fiery. He's going to talk trash. He's going to, you know, gator chomp to the crowd and tell them to get loud. And I think that that's just a sign, when that starts to get noticed nationally, that's just a sign that you have the right coach and a coach that's successful. Even Seth Davis tweeted something about Todd being involved in a lot of these tiffs and altercations with other coaches.
He's such a hack.
He is.
I won't pretend, you know, that some of these blue bloods don't have more money than Florida. They could obviously offer that from an NIL perspective. I mean, Kentucky had $22 million roster this year, and that's probably more than our football roster. But, you know, Todd kind of strikes me as not really being wired as a money first kind of guy. Like, the second Denzel Aberdeen asked for a raise, like, he was kind of gone, because it became a me first type deal with him, and he's just not about that, you know. Like, I think he kind of takes pride in, like, finding an Alex Condon, you know, from a world away and bringing him here, or finding Tommy Howe just being a diehard Gator up in Pennsylvania that's, like, lightly recruited, and turning him into, you know, a hopeful lottery pick. And so I don't know that, like, expanded NIL budgets would just be a total draw, like, you know, On Three might tell you it is, or, you know, Field of 68 or whatever some of these other sites are, that's like, oh, every single blue blood's got to call Todd Golden and make him say no. You know, kind of the same thing with, like, UConn. Like, UConn doesn't have as much NIL money as Kentucky or North Carolina or Duke, but Hurley obviously wants to stay there. It's a little bit more of a storied program than Florida, but it's not a traditional blue blood in the sense.
I agree.
So hopefully Todd is
he was making a great point.
Oh, did cut I out a little bit. Where did you lose me?
Yeah, to finish what he was saying, though, I think that we're the University of Florida, and we don't take a backseat to anybody. Whether the brand doesn't That's take exactly a backseat to anybody.
Hey, Dev, Ole Miss just went through something similar.
Yeah, we're not Ole Miss football. Florida basketball is not Ole Miss football. It's LSU football. Like, Ole Miss, when they have three national championships in basketball or three national championships in football, they can make that claim.
Just want to make that clear for everyone listening.
I think Florida's a little bit more accomplished in basketball than Ole Miss is in football.
Yeah. But I think I'm starting to hit the hopeful stage a little bit, because I did.
That was quick.
It ebbs and flows.
It was just connection one time.
I'm gonna take a bite of my lunch.
Rebooted SG.
I'm gonna take a bite of my lunch tomorrow. And
numbers, folks, we should have known this was coming. Out of the last 10 years, only one defending champ made it to the Sweet 16. So history told us we were getting bounced in the first weekend.
That stat didn't come across my desk before we got bounced. That's not me cool. Neither. Someone's got to point that out.
We've never been the kind of podcast to ignore things that we don't like to hear.
Either. Yeah, that's not really like us.
It's really convenient for that stat to pop up right when the guy made that shot.
Yeah.
Well, we just like to guess, as Jackson's the tweet behind his head says, right? You know, we're just throwing stuff out there.
Just a bunch of guys guessing and claiming sources that we don't have. So
find that.
Thank you guys for listening to us. Anything else to add, basketball related, as the 2025-2026 season ends earlier than we all anticipated?
It was a hell of a ride. It was a hell of a ride. It was a lot of fun with you guys getting on here, you know, 1-2 times a week, talking ball, locked in since opening tip, first game, you know, and that's not a, you know, some people it's all football and tuning in on basketball when it's postseason. That's not a shot. I mean, some people are just all about football, and I don't blame them. And I get it. Football's king. But we're diehards when it comes to basketball too, and so we care so much is why it hurts so much. And that's part of the fun.
Where would you rank this in tournament defeats in our lives? Does it crack the top five?
Oh yeah, I would say this is probably the worst loss other than the 2014 UConn.
What about 2012 Louisville Elite Eight?
2012 Louisville, 2011 Butler, those were pretty losing, tough.
Losing to South Carolina in that Elite Eight after Chioza's big shot against Wisconsin. A South Carolina team that we were better than.
Much better than, yeah.
But that entire Mike White era is so tainted for me.
Yeah, but that was a bad loss. That was a Final Four that should have been.
But if he makes that Final Four,
he's probably still our coach.
There's a lot of painful losses.
That last round of 32 loss to Oral Roberts was a killer.
But I rate this one above all those because this was like truly a championship squad. Like those Billy teams that lost in the Elite Eight were all overachieving. This was like the number 4 seed in the entire tournament. Dominated the SEC, probably the second best version of the SEC there's ever been. And, you know, just ran into an Iowa team that hit some clutch shots.
What year was it that we lost to Michigan State in Tampa in the round of 32 as a 2 seed? Was it like 2001? It's kind of similar to that, I guess. Only that team got blown out by that Michigan
State. They were the defending champs in 2001.
Yeah.
What Michigan State was.
It was early 2000s that we lost a de facto home game in Tampa as a 2 seed. Obviously, that's kind of before all of our time of being diehard fans. But yeah, this was one that you're always nervous going into tournament games, but going into this game, I was kind of nervous, but it felt like we were upset proof in a way, the way that the roster was built in the front court and all the champions that we had on the team. So for it to go down that way, it's a painful loss for sure.
I was blindsided, to be honest with you. I didn't think there was any chance we were losing that game going in. I was as confident as I've been in any game this year. Florida Gators, Iowa, in Tampa, home game. You know, they have one guy that's going to be a beyond college basketball player. And I was very confident, and I was wrong. That's a good team. That's a well-coached team that Ben McCollum Cat's going to be around for a while and going to be making noise for a while. He knows how to coach basketball.
There was a point in the second half where my dad was sitting next to me and Jake Lovelace and Hunter, you and your dad were sitting on the other side of him. We were looking at each other and just saying, I wish they would turn the ball over one time. I don't know how many they had for the game. I don't have the stat sheet pulled up in front of me, but it just seemed like they didn't give us anything. And then you get the big turnover. You're up by 3 with a minute left. There was not to rehash the play and go through it again. I guess I'm back in one of the stages, denial. But it was
so much progress.
It was like
so close to baseball, man.
That 8 seconds left. It was Boogie went under the screen, Lee didn't switch right. Obviously coming out of the timeout, the plan's not for Todd Golden. Todd Golden didn't tell them, let Sturts get a running start and then get a 3-on-2 with a shooter in the corner. And that's how it ends up working out. If Tommy would have just went to the corner and forced Sturts to make a running 3 or go to the rim, Kondo's under the rim, or Boogie catches him if he stops at the 3-point line. It's just it's like every single thing on that play that had to go wrong went wrong, and it's just
so frustrating.
Dev, you got Jake from New Orleans here, live listener, almost in tears, rehashing that play for the fifth time tonight.
Well, and SG, remind the crowd, where should number 7 have been?
Federal prison. But yeah, to. your point, like, it's very, very painful, like, of Gator basketball losses just because the expectation was significantly higher than years past. I would even say expectation was maybe even a little bit higher than last year. Like, I don't really think any of us going into last year as a one seed thought we would go on that crazy run. And even if we maybe lost in the Elite Eight or Final Four, you know, we're trending in the right direction, but we thought we would at least be playing this coming Saturday or Sunday at the very least with the chance. Yes.
The goal was always to get the second weekend.
We all thought that the Gators were going to win the national championship because we all picked them to win in our brackets, right? So.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about that all together at the at Lower Deck all weekend, didn't we?
Thank you, Dev. Thank you, Dev. Shout out, Dev, sticking up for me.
I think I was in the bathroom when you guys were talking about that.
Wow. Tell me it must have hurt.
This is my bargaining phase.
I will, if I could say one more thing, Jackson, when we talk about, you know, how heartbreaking it was, and we talk about the all the different heartbreaking losses over the years, we had a crowd of, we were in a section where there was only four rows kind of together, so we were kind of like secluded in an area in the corner of the arena. We had probably, what you say, Dev, like a 10 or 11-year-old kid sitting behind us. He was as passionate as it comes, and we had probably eight of us, friends-wise, maybe 10, all going crazy with this 10 or 11-year-old right behind us, just cheering his heart out, going crazy. Anytime we would celebrate a big shot or during that comeback, we would turn around and go crazy with him too, and he loved it, and you could see it. And you know, he was in tears when we lost, and it was really hard to see, but we kind of were talking about it after, and you know, it reminded us of us, right, when we're younger and different heartbreaking losses, when, you know, whether it be the Louisville game or in college, almost in tears when we lose to South Carolina, or I don't know, an hour after he left when I was almost in tears. I mean, it you know, it continues. It doesn't stop just because you grow up. But it kind of, you know, it reminds you what you do it for. People say it's just sports. But, you know, it means something to us. And it's fun to come together with your friends and people you care about to cheer on the Gators. And, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the thought is there, but it's special.
No, I mean, you're exactly right. And it's like what you were saying earlier about the football and the basketball. Like, we're so blessed to be Florida Gator fans, where we truly have a passionate fan base for both. Like, obviously, every fan base has the casuals that just kind of show up at the end of March. And, you know, that was the second game they'd watched, and they only tuned into the first, you know, minute of the Prairie View game. But, I mean, to actually have, like, a listener base and, like, we get to talk football and be diehards in football, and then we get to be diehards in basketball, and, you know, pretty passionate fan base for baseball and softball and gymnastics too. It's just, you know, even in the most heartbreaking losses, it's always so great to be a Florida Gator, because there's not another fan base in the country that's even close to doing this. Like, even, you know, look at our top rivals, Georgia and Florida State. Like, they can't touch what we do year round. And just the passion that this fan base has is so special. So always proud to be a Gator in all kinds of weather, even when it's not profitable. And just, I guess now we're back to the denial phase, and we're all depressed again. We almost, you know, made it.
Really, being overshadowed by this loss to Iowa is that we did cover the largest spread in the NCAA tournament since 1999, and it was 59 points, second largest victory in tournament history. Is that correct?
And now teams that have beaten 16 seed by 50 or more points are 0-2 in the round of 32.
Another stat that did not come across. I think the other game was also Prairie View.
It was Kansas Prairie View, 1998.
Yeah.
How about the fact How about the fact that we beat three of the 16 Sweet 16 teams by more than 20 points?
I had one kid at work tell me today, did you see the Prairie View's coach interview on Friday? I said, yeah, it was funny until Sunday. I don't want to hear about it anymore.
Yeah, God answered the call. He just answered it for Iowa.
We were sharing those same sentiments on Sunday.
It's four of them, right? Because you got Tennessee, Texas, Bama, and Arkansas.
Well, we didn't beat Texas by 20, but
oh, I gotcha.
I'm talking like we utterly dominated three out of the top 16 teams, and people are wondering if
Todd. We did dominate Texas the final 10 minutes, though. I mean, that was a big.
That ended up like a 15
point game. Okay, so include Texas, and then we played, you know, three of the other ones as tight as can be. And we got people on here questioning whether Todd Golden needs to change his roster building strategy. And I mean,
it's like Mark Pope said, the loudest 1% are the ones online that you can see all
the time. You know, I don't want to take any hints from Mark Pope. He seems to be going down a Billy Napier type path.
I was just gonna say, like, in a basement in Central Florida.
I'm looking for Mark Pope to start showing up on game days in black next year. So watch out for that. But you know, like, Todd kind of had to build the roster this way. Like, you were always going to return Ruben and Condon and Tommy. And so you really just had to try to find two guards to do that. And you'd already had Aberdeen until he, you know, ditched us and then had his career just totally tank. What a shame that was. But, you know, he was outside of, like, the circumstances that created with that timeline, he was kind of limited to, like, you know, we have these guys and we're going to play Tommy at the three because we just won a national championship and you've got to try to trust and develop him. And so, you know, Jacob Lovelace said the offense was going to be clunky in our preseason show, and they kind of figured it out and won the SEC, you know, ultimately went 1-for-3 in the staff's, you know, goals. But, you know, I think we're probably going to get back to, like, what we saw in 2025 with, like, a two-big lineup and three guards around those guys who are absolute dog scorers and rebounders to sort of fix the spacing issues that we had a little bit. But, you know, if you told me that we would win the SEC and get a one seed, I would take that every single year.
Yeah, to your point, Will, I never really liked Tommy at the three. That was a tweet I saw this week, by the way. The guy was
after he became an All-American.
Yeah, second team All-American.
The second in program history.
All right, I think before we get to Dev's baseball minute, we have a lot to talk about there, even though he's held to 60 seconds. First live guest appearance, we got Jake from New Orleans jumping on to give his thoughts.
Great to see all of you. This weekend, except for Will and Sam. I know it's hard to get to Tampa from Scottsdale and Hyde Park.
Even closer.
Closer to across the street.
Oh, man.
We can see his apartment, Jake, from the bar.
Yeah. Well, the traffic from Channelside to Amelie must be pretty bad. But, you know, great takes tonight, guys. Been a big fan of the show for a long time. It's great to you know, have somewhat of a relationship with you guys outside of the show. So what I'll say, you know, you guys have hit on a lot of points, but college basketball is the greatest data set in sports. As far as you look at what Todd does year in, year out, with the roster construction, with different metrics that, you know, make a difference in the wins and losses. But there's so many different ways for these things to go. And I kept thinking during that Iowa game, when is Iowa going to fall back to, you know, regress to the mean or something like that, right? But just the way that it worked out was killer. It was a tough to see, you know, them come out and shoot 7-for-7 to open the second half. It also seemed like these rebounds, we talked about Ruben having a rough game, but, you know, the ball was bouncing their way all night. It's a shame that these type of games happen in March, but that's why college basketball is college basketball, and you just look to bounce back.
Love it.
Hell yeah, Jake.
I'd like to mention that Jake flew back Monday morning from Tampa back to New Orleans and then drove Tuesday to Jacksonville to hang out with me and go to the Gator baseball game against Florida State. So I got to see
him. On your birthday. We forgot to sing Jackson happy birthday.
Happy birthday, JR.
Thanks, Sam.
Fearless leader.
Jake got back to New Orleans and came visit me before I saw Will in his own hometown, which is just remarkable.
It's amazing the things you can do as a 26-year-old who still has spring breaks.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. After Jackson made all those jokes about me making brackets instead of billing hours, they really came back to haunt me this weekend.
Nice save. You hear that, bosses?
Yeah. I think he told us before the show he just watched his fiance work, and I think he was just watching ball the entire time.
She was working very hard. She's the best. She was working really hard to provide for, you know, all my Twitter takes, but I was working too.
It's
probably not quite as hard as she does.
All right, Dev, unfortunately, that's all we have for basketball. We're still trying to configure a schedule moving forward, maybe once a month until fall camp starts in August. So that's going to be the last.
Well, we'll be back when baseball postseason starts ramping up. We got to come deliver some hot takes, you know.
We got to get that first.
We got people discussing, you know, whether or not we should fire Sully before we go out there and dominate Florida State. That Dev will get to in his baseball minutes. We can't, you know. I want to be part of the fire Sully or hire Sully crowd.
Questions were being asked this morning if Sully is the John Calipari at Kentucky of college baseball. So the conversations are starting to be out there. I've kind of gone through the same five stages of grief for Devin's baseball minute. After the weekend in Tuscaloosa, we get no hit on Friday, anger, come out on Saturday and Sunday, show a little bit of fight, get our asses kicked twice, get swept 3-3 in conference play, walk a zillion guys, just miserable, miserable watch. Me and my dad, I think the Hunter and Jackson at least can attest to, we watched from the cell phone at lower deck, in Tampa all weekend, just a brutal watch. And then to totally redeem themselves and come out tonight and to just mow down Florida State batters. I think there's 34 strikeouts over the two games against Florida State this year. If Florida's going to go 15-15 in SEC play, at least you can count on us still dog walking Florida State and Miami in college baseball whenever we get to play them. 1-8 out of our last 9 series against Florida State. Great way to bounce back from a rough weekend in Tuscaloosa. We go to Fayetteville this weekend. Shout out to Mark. I checked. It's in Fayetteville against Arkansas. Another tough road SEC series that if you want to win the conference, if you want to host regionals, you can't get swept in your road series. You got, even if you don't win the series, you can't get swept. That's what prevents you from hosting. So the good way to bounce back. We'll see what we do this weekend. The only thing consistent about the pitching staff is that they're inconsistent. So we'll see. We'll see how Liam and Aiden King and whoever starts on Sunday this week come out and throw it. See if we can throw strikes. So,
hey Dev, I know you got the location of the Gators' first SEC series wrong. I believe you got the Twitter shout out wrong.
That's not.
I think it was
Ryan King.
Ryan King.
Right, more tough coaching is needed, Ryan. Tweet at
more tough coaching.
Did anybody else have their stopwatch for Dev's baseball minute there?
Is that over? Cash the over?
I had him at a very generous Florida Pro Day 40 time. I wasn't too sure when the baseball minute quite started. So this was a Pro Day time at a minute 39.
You mentioned the five stages of grief again, and I almost relapsed.
Pro Day is Thursday in Gainesville.
Some tough coaching was needed. I didn't want to talk about the weekend in Tuscaloosa.
So yeah,
well, I could say tonight I was not very enthusiastic going to the Vistar ballpark tonight in 55-degree misty weather for 3 hours, but it certainly made up for it by beating Florida State 5-0.
Well, it's a good thing you weren't enthusiastic about going to the Vistar ballpark, because that was the baseball grounds of Jacksonville that you were at.
We get everything wrong on this podcast, man.
except that Zay Brown is going to have to hit some clutch free throws. I mean, what the hell is that?
It is literally the Vistar ballpark, Dev.
It's Vistar Veterans Memorial Arena that you're thinking of.
Okay.
I actually think that we might not be the baseball grounds of Jacksonville anymore. think it might
be. It's called Viasar Ballpark.
I don't think so. Let's end the show. It's 55 minutes in.
Oh, man. Nobody's focused.
Look what the basketball team.
This is what the basketball team's done to us.
I think we're adding a new stage. It's called Delirium.
Man.
Well, we appreciate everybody listening throughout this basketball season. It's been greatly appreciated. We appreciate your interactions with us, providing questions, tough coaching. We coach tough to the last second, and we're still coaching tough as we enter the 2026 offseason. So plenty more to come. We'll ramp up if the Gators make it to the postseason in Omaha. Hopefully host a regional for the first time in 3 years at Condren Ballpark. But we'll get back to you guys with a scheduled timeline. But just can't say thank you enough. And make sure you're following us on Twitter at BreakfastWTG, YouTube, Spotify, and Apple. And we'll see you guys soon. Go Gators.
Go Gators.
Go Gators.
Go Gators.